inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
My guest on the podcast today has really turned his life around. A few years ago, he was in crushing debt. I mean, he was just in over his head with consumer debt. Today, he's managed to pay everything off, and he also owns a rental portfolio that's free and clear, that's generating a bunch of income for him every month. I want to figure out exactly how he got to where he is today, and we'll dive into it here in just 30 seconds. We need to get a quick word in from our sponsor. We'll come back, and we'll meet Jesse Wright from Florida.
Are you on track to achieve your financial goals? Income-producing real estate is the most historically proven way to accumulate wealth and has created more financial freedom than any other means. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best turnkey cash flow rental properties. Our simple proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly income. Get your free strategy session with our knowledgeable investment counselors at noradarealestate.com. That's N-O-R-A-D-A realestate.com.
Hey, Jesse, so before you started investing in real estate, you were in a lot of debt. What was your life? Tell me what it looked like back then.
You know, when we were in a lot of debt, it was one of those things where not only for a minute there were we not paying off our debt, but every month it was kind of a struggle. We didn't know if we were going to have to go in more debt. You know, over the course of time, after a little while, we just weren't able to pay things off. You know, we were living month to month. And then after that, my wife actually got very sick. And that exacerbated the situation. So we went into more debt and I actually had to take a huge hit as far as income. Yeah, so it was definitely rock bottom.
So you hit bottom, and then when things turned around, your wife got better, and you wanted to pay off this debt, and you used Dave Ramsey's snowball. You kind of followed his snowball model. Why don't you kind of just tell us real quickly, like, exactly how that works?
So, you know, we did it a little differently than Dave Ramsey talks about in his book. You know, he'll have you write out a budget, how much you want to spend on this, how much you want to spend on that. What we did was we wrote out all of our debts and we spent as little as we could. You know, I mean, we were eating rice and beans. We were not going out to eat. I was working 70 hours a week. And, you know, if we had $1,000 left over that month, or $2,000 or $3,000, then we would pay it off.
Okay.
So that we really just kind of took everything that we possibly could and lived dirt poor.
Yeah. And then you got everything paid off so that now you're out of debt. And you were ready to start investing in real estate, but you didn't want to get back into debt. So tell me about how, because most real estate investors love debt. They kind of use debt to buy the properties, but you didn't want to get in more debt. Was it just because of that really hard experience that you just didn't want to borrow money again?
I think that was a huge part of it. I've always seen debt as slavery.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I feel like if I owe somebody something, then they own a part of me.
Right.
And until I can pay it off, they're going to own a part of me. And, you know, I know that's not how it works for a lot of people, especially when they're talking about taking out a mortgage or a credit card or something like that. But it's so ingrained into me at this point. And I just didn't want to go through that lack of freedom again.
Right.
So
now you were living in Mississippi at the time, and prices are really cheap in Mississippi. So it's not like it was costing hundreds of thousands of dollars for these properties. Like you were focusing on the kind of low end properties, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And So these houses needed a lot of work, right?
Well, they actually know. One, they were in areas that everybody told me not to buy in.
Mm-hmm.
And two, they were messed up. You know, there were holes in the drywall, the carpet needed to be torn out, or, you know, the flooring needed to be replaced, things like that. But really, every single house that I bought, if you looked at it, it was really just a matter of painting and flooring and some minor cosmetic fixes. But because of the way they looked, it just looked a lot worse than it was, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
So it would scare off a lot of other buyers. So you were able to get in there. And were you doing the work yourself?
I was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you have a construction background? Like, did you know how to do stuff, or did you just figure it out?
I figured it out. Me and my wife did it together, actually. And yeah, that's just how we grew up.
Right.
One property, it was the second property I bought that I let it sit for a little too long. I bought the house and then I was out of money. So I had to save up more money.
Okay.
And when I did that, it got mold in it. And so I had to rip out all the walls and, you know, treat the mold. And actually I found out that there was a leak and I had to, redo a lot of the plumbing in the bathroom, but that's pretty much the most, extreme rehab I've had to do.
Was it hard to find the time to work your full-time job and also have the time to do the rehabs on night and weekends?
It was. Thankfully, at the time, I still worked for the company that I work for now, but at that time, I was just on an hourly basis, and I was doing more mobile support for people. Mm-hmm. And they literally let me work whatever hours I wanted to.
Okay. That's great.
And, you know, yeah. So it kind of worked well. We rehabbed most of our houses within a month.
Okay. Tell me about the neighborhood. So you said these are kind of rougher neighborhoods that you're buying?
Well, yeah. People would say that they were rougher neighborhoods, but what I did was I would walk the streets. I really, you know, try to, and that didn't bother me. I door knocked for years. So, you know, I would go into any neighborhood, but the houses really weren't, they were on the edge. So they were right in between a very nice neighborhood and a not so nice neighborhood. And I wanted to make sure that there was plenty of visibility all the way around the house so that people would not be inclined to break in. And really, I just think that the idea that the neighborhoods were bad was more a stereotype than anything. I left a $400 or $300 drill out in the front yard of the first house I bought, and I left it out there all weekend long. And when I came back, it was still right there where I left it. So
it's not, they're not really high crime areas, like, but more of like maybe just a blue collar type neighborhood.
Yeah. They're not, I do have one that's high. Actually, I do have one that's in a very high crime area.
Okay.
But the other two, not so much. And the one that is in the high crime area, again, it's on a main road. There's a lot of visibility. There's not a lot of foot traffic. So all that stuff cuts down on the crime. But I do definitely have that one, you know, barred up.
Now, the returns when in general in lower income areas, you can make more money generally on those properties, but a lot of times they're more management intensive. Like, do you find that you're having to babysit your clients a little bit more, or that they're doing more damage to the properties?
I would say that they definitely don't take care of it as well as some other people might, but that's just going to come and go as tenants come and go. But really even the damage that is done, you know, nobody's gone through and gotten angry at me and ripped out all of my wiring or anything like that.
Okay. That's good.
So it's not terrible. It's definitely worth the returns.
Coming up on the Rental Income Podcast.
Recently, Jesse moved from Mississippi to Florida and he's still self-managing his rental properties. I want to see how that's working out for him. Also, he's not using any debt to buy his rental properties, so I want to see how he's getting the money to do this, where this is coming from. So we'll get into this here in just a second. First, I want to take a second and thank our sponsor today, MyLandlordHelper.com. If you're self-managing your rental properties and maybe you need a little bit of help, maybe you're just feeling a little bit overwhelmed, my landlord helper can help you out. So if your tenant has a problem, maybe something's broken, your tenant could call my landlord helper. As far as the tenant knows, my landlord helper would be the property manager. So your tenant would make that call 24/7 into my landlord helper. They would take that phone call, call the repair person, do whatever needs to be done to take care of the issue. If the tenant doesn't pay, my landlord helper will make follow-up phone calls, try to figure out what the problem is and get that tenant to pay you. And if they don't pay, they can start the filings of the legal notices to get the eviction started. When you have a vacancy, they can help you out by getting your listings ready, making sure that your listing looks good and that everything is marketed right. And when you get applicants, they can help you with the screening. So there's a lot that they can do to help you out. If you want to learn more, go to mylandlordhelper.com. They're offering a free 30-day trial so you can try it out. It's a very good service, very, very nice people. Check it out, mylandlordhelper.com. All right, let's get back to the show. So, Jesse, tell me, you recently moved. Has it been hard to manage your rental properties from out of town?
It's a little bit time-consuming. Actually, I will tell you one thing, though. Yes, it is difficult. But the one added benefit is that because I am not there and they can't get in front of me and talk to me face-to-face, and I actually don't communicate with them over the phone except through text or email. So being a little bit separated makes it a lot easier to give them that eviction notice if they pay,
right?
You know, if they're not paying on time. And, it's definitely helped cut down on those people trying to get away with not paying their rent, you know.
Why do you have them text and email? Is it just easier, like, to not have to deal with phone calls?
I think it's because I'm a pretty nice guy. Mm-hmm. And so when somebody calls me up and they say, I'm having a hard time this month, I lost my job, or, you know, my car broke down, and they're crying. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to be the kind of landlord that I need to be. You know, right. It's hard for me to look at it like a business, which that's what it is. And so when they text or email, there, it takes out that,
they can't get me. Right. And then also, I think it's great too, because it gives you time to respond. So if they want to maybe do something to the house, you don't have to make a decision right then. You can think about it for a second. So I kind of like that. I think that's awesome. Now, one thing that that I think is really awesome that you're doing is you're basically using Dave Ramsey's snowball to reinvest the profits into the house. So tell me how that works, how you're taking the profit you make from one property and then using that to buy another house.
Yeah. Okay. So the first house that we bought, you know, we had to save up all of that money ourselves. I didn't have anything working for me at the time. So, you know, it took a little while to build up that cash. But afterwards, you know, that first house that we bought, we were in it $15,000. That was completely done. Everything looked brand new when we were finished with it. We had a total investment of $15,000.
That's for buying the house and for fixing it up?
And for fixing it up.
That is incredible. Yep. So how much did the house cost to buy?
You know, I don't remember if it was $8,500 or $9,500.
Okay.
I believe it was $9,500.
Okay. And then the rest of the money is what it cost to fix it up. So $15,000 is all it took to get this house ready to go. And what do you have that rented out for?
$650 a month right now, and wow, it's been that way ever since we bought it. It hasn't really, rent hasn't increased too much, but our expenses are so low on that house that we make about $6,000, sometimes a little bit more than $6,000 a year off of it.
After everything.
After everything. Wow. So, you know, that's 40% of our original investment, and we just take it, put it into the next one. The next house we bought, I think we paid $12,000 for it. We were in it about $20,000 when it was all said and done. And it rents out for $850 a month. So
wow,
after everything's said and done, we make about $8,500. off of that.
It's so amazing how cheap that is. Now, are these just crazy deals that you found, or in your area are houses just that cheap?
You know, they're definitely on the low end, but they're available every month. You know, I can find like five or six of them every month.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
And so you're getting 40% of your money back every single year on each property. So after about 2.5 years, your tenant has basically bought that house.
Exactly.
That is incredible. Yeah. So you just keep taking the money that you're making, your cash flow from that first property, you put that aside, and after a while, you've got the money saved up. I guess after about 2.5 years or so, you've got that money saved up, and you can just do it again.
Exactly.
And just do it again. Wow.
That's where the snowball kicks in.
Right. That is really, really incredible. And you think if you just keep doing that over and over and over again, just what a big pile of money you're going to have every month.
Exactly.
That is really awesome. Now being so far away and you're self-managing these properties, do you find that it takes you a lot of time to manage it? Like, say in your average day, does anything really go on, or is it really kind of hands off?
It's for the most part hands off. They might text me, a tenant might text me and say, the hot water heater won't start, and I'll call a plumber and have him go out and change a thermocouple on the hot water heater.
Okay.
But really, I mean, what are we talking about? 15 minutes, 30 minutes a week.
Right.
It's not really that bad. The only time that it's not so nice, there's actually a tenant that I'm about to evict, and I'm going to have to wait until I go back to Mississippi in December before I even evict them.
Okay.
So I think that's when it gets a little difficult.
Yeah. Do you have any Section 8 tenants, or are these all market rate tenants?
I do have Section 8 tenants.
Okay.
I also have, just regular cash paying customers.
Is the Section 8 more difficult? Because I know a lot of landlords, I guess there's two schools of thought. Some people love it because the money just shows up on the first every month, but a lot of times they're kind of overbearing on their inspections and what they require on the house. Like, have you found it's a lot of work to deal with the Section 8, like just to get the house up to the standards that the housing authority requires?
I think that for me, it's been great. If I could have every single one of my houses on Section 8, then I would.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about how you treat that inspector. The rule book is stacked in such a way that they can deny anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So it's mostly about just building a good relationship with that inspector when he comes out, making sure that the house is functional, livable, clean. And as long as you cover the bases, and you're a nice guy, you probably won't have any problems.
Right.
But again, that varies from inspector to inspector. You might have a guy that's having a bad day or a bad life. And,
right.
If that's what you got in your area, then Section 8 may not be for you.
Right. I have one Section 8 tenant, and it seems like they always find something when they do an inspection. Like, do you find the same thing, that when they come out, they're always going to find something?
Most of the time, most inspections that I have, they'll let me know one thing.
It's usually
something minor.
Yeah.
And it's, like $100 or less to fix. I have found that, and this is kind of risky, but if you have the house vacant when the inspector is coming to do the very first inspection, he's going to find a lot more. If you go ahead and take the risk and move the tenant in, then they're going to want to get in and get out as fast as possible, in my experience. And so it, I have had that happen where they told me everything was fine
now,
multiple times.
Are you taking a risk at all that if that, I guess the tenant's already been approved, right? So there's no risk that they're not going to approve the tenant. It's just a matter of getting the house up to standards, right? So is there any risk at all in doing that?
You know, I could see what most of the houses in Mississippi have a little bit of foundation issues. You know, it's not something that makes the house, there's going to be cracks in the slabs oftentimes. You're not going to see a lot of fall from one side of the room to the left, but just that's, we have this Yazoo clay. So if you moved a tenant into your property and then the inspector came out and he wanted to just really give you a hard time, he could say, well, you're going to have to fix the foundation before HUD will start paying for this. And you're not going to do that.
Right.
So now you have to kick the tenant out. So there is a little bit of risk, but it's minimal.
Okay.
I just don't think that it's a risk I'm willing to take.
Yeah, it seems like it's worth it, because if you're going to get dinged for less repairs, it might be worth rolling the dice. And now, how do you get paid for the other tenants that are cash paying tenants? How do they pay you?
Actually, what I've done lately is I have a separate checking account just for the rental properties, and I gave them the account number and I told them to go deposit into the bank every
month. That's good. That's really good. I think especially for your tenants, because they're probably not able to pay online or any kind of automatic payment probably wouldn't work for them, right? They're probably more dealing in cash.
Right.
So they can just bring the cash to the bank, deposit it into your account, and then you're done.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, Jesse, you've got a great story. Thank you so much for coming on the show. If someone wants to track you down online, what's the best way for someone to find you?
You know, either look me up on YouTube or go to my website. It's youcouldbe.com, and that's spelled youcouldbe.com. I'll be here.
Awesome. Well, if you want to look Jesse up, I'll go ahead and put a link to his website on my website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode 152. If this is your first time listening, make sure you hit that subscribe button and you'll get an episode delivered to you automatically every single Tuesday. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.